Welcome to the wrestling podcast that's not just for wrestling fans. This is Smark and Friends on the Two Finger Guns Club Network. My name is Zach and I'll be your host. It's a big week for comic book lovers in Canada as Toronto Comic Arts Festival kicks off this coming weekend. They're sticking to digital as they had done last year, but as always, they have some very dynamic creative forces attending. They're going to be welcoming the likes of Daniel Klaus, Molly Osterhage, and many more, including my guest for today's episode, Jason Lapidus. He's a talented artist behind Group of Seven, a work of historical fiction about real-life Canadian legends who served overseas at the very same time. If it wasn't crazy enough that these historical figures were fighting in World War I at the same time, Jason and Group of Seven writer Chris Sanigan made them their own unit and pit them against conspiracy and monsters and all those wonderful staples from the comic book world. It's a great series. We talk about it at length before jumping into a wrestling watch along on YouTube. So go ahead, queue up YouTube, and we'll be back right after these messages.
Hello, hello, ladies, gentlemen, and everything in between. This is your Rocket Man speaking, Connor Speak, flying back in to let you guys know that Rocket Man Explores Season 2 is on its way. This particular season, we're going to be looking at the subject of artificial intelligence, one of the many world-ending scenarios that is eventually going to creep up on us once the plague has finally had its way, so we might as well start talking about it now before an army of Arnold Schwarzeneggers takes us all down. If you want to get the scoop of when everything's coming out, please follow us on Twitter at RocketmanTFGC. You can catch the first episode on May 10th.
And we're back. Joining me today from Toronto, time out of what is surely a busy schedule as Toronto Comic Arts Festival looms, artist of the comic series Group of Seven, Jason Lapidus. Jason, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me here, Zach. Nice to see you.
Yeah, gladly. You know, like my relationship with TCAF is like very early, but they always send me like the most interesting people. So I'm like super excited to be talking to you today. Thanks for being a part of this. As mentioned, just around the corner, we have TCAF coming up, in which Group of Seven will be debuting two new comics. You have Group of Seven issue number 7 and Peregrines part 1, the latter of which I understand is being in print for the first time after being like an Instagram webcomic. How are you feeling heading into TCAF? I understand it's your first time doing so.
I'm very excited about it. My collaborator, Chris Sanigan, the writer of Group of Seven, and I have both been eyeing the festival as a place or as a destination that we wanted to get to. And I want to participate in any way that we could. We've been going there together, actually, for a few years as we started collaborating on putting comics together. So it's a big deal for us to be there and to participate. But truthfully, I'm just really happy it's on. I really love seeing what people make and seeing friendly faces, meeting new people. This year is not going to be that kind of festival, given that it's virtual. But at least we do get to see what creators have been doing, during the lockdown and the COVID year that we've been having. So I'm very excited about it. And it's really cool to be there for sure.
Absolutely. And certainly it's not a conventional version of the convention, but hopefully it leads to, once the world starts making sense again, you can be there in person, making FaceTime with the fans and whatnot.
For sure. That's a dream. Definitely looking forward to.
So Group of Seven itself, it's a piece of historical fiction surrounding World War I events. I'm halfway through issue 1 myself, and I'm going to invite you to guess what I'm doing right after we're done recording. Elevator pitch, your own words. What can you tell us about the series?
Group of Seven Comics is an action-adventure series starring 7 famous Canadian historical figures on a secret mission that is fictional to save the world. And so that's the elevator pitch for the first 6 issues, which is sort of one story that we, in hindsight, call a most secret tale.
Mm-hmm. Ominous.
I'm flashing this on the YouTube there. I'm sorry, on the video screen here, you can see this is the trade that that we collected. We published in, I think, August of last year. We finally got it out. But it was, a labor of love for about 3.5 years to sort of not just have the story gestate and come together, but learn how to make comics, learn how to publish comics. But most important, I think, learn how to finish making comics. Because I think a lot of people know how to start making things. And we knew how to get in, we didn't know how to finish. So that was a really great learning experience to figure out how to get things done, really, like to learn how to let go. As a creative person, I'm sure you also know that you can infinitely tinker, and that is a bottomless pit of pain and suffering.
it's never done the curse of the creative aspect. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've been working with Chris Etigan like from the get-go on this series, like obviously heavy collaboration between the two of you. How did the project like come together from like, you know, if we're talking day one?
For sure. It came together from Chris, without a doubt. Chris commutes in, or in the before times, Chris commuted into Toronto from the beautiful city of Guelph, Ontario. And on those rides in, Chris was able to do some writing on the GO train and those kinds of, and the bus and whatnot. And we were coming up to the centenary of World War One, and Chris had been noticing through just reading, you know, he loves to read history, and he had noticed that there were quite a few really prominent figures in the 20th century that had served in World War One. And this thought was in his head, like, wouldn't it be really funny if they met? And that wouldn't it be crazy if they were on like some sort of mission together? And if you watch enough team up movies or read enough team up comics or books or anything like that, you start to notice those tropes of the roles characters play to make a complete team. And so he started pretending that these guys fit into these tropes. You know, one guy's the leader, one guy's the brains, one guy's the knuckles. You know, and it started to really turn into something in his mind. And he and I had been friends already through our wives for a number of years. And one day our family was visiting them, and he just said, "Hey, I've got an idea for a comic book. Let me pitch you on it." And I was laughing every time he said a name, he kind of said what the role of the person would be. And, you know, we get to like the navigator, the map expert. And there's like, you know, Montreal's own A.Y. Jackson, the famous painter. So he, you know, he served in World War One. He was a war painter and also had been putting together maps before that and doing some low ranking missions. But it was like, yeah, okay, we've got all these parts. We have the lab rats, guys like the guy who co-discovered insulin. Sir Frederick Banting was there. Norman Bethune, the famous medic and humanitarian, was there, a founder of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Conn Smythe, a legendary sniper and the highest ranking Indigenous soldier in the First World War, Francis Pegamagaba was there. So we got all these kind of characters that fit right in. Poet John McCrae would be the center of the book, and it just, and Lester B. Pearson, Prime Minister, Nobel Prize winner as well. Nobel Peace Prize. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone right now, but you refer to the cover. No, I got them all. So when he mentioned all those names, it was like a pretty fun idea. He wanted something that was a little bit action, adventure oriented, as opposed to straight up history. And it wouldn't be a history lesson as much as it would be playing with history and having fun weaving in and out of certain key moments in Canadian history. We're both really big fans of Canadiana, and We really love the parts of our country's history that we've been exposed to so far. We get inundated with American culture here in Canada as well, which we're cool with, but we have a special spot in our heart for those Canadian things. And when he threw the name at me that he had in mind, it was like, okay, take Canadian history, take sort of arts and culture, put it together, and it's like, there's no better name for seven people. We're not going to call it the Justice League or, you know, you know, G.I. Joe Canada. It's like, no, Group of Seven was like, it's perfect. It's low key. It's sort of not too proud a name. It's sort of this, oh, we're just a group, not Elite Seven unit, amazing people. It's just a Group of Seven. It's sort of straightforward, but it also seemed to trigger with people coming to these events who, when they saw the name, they would do a double take because it's a brand that they recognize.
Mm-hmm. Of course, right. The famous painters.
Famous painters, of which A.Y. Jackson in the book was a prominent member. So it really gave people a reason to say, did you guys make a comic book about painters? And they'd come over the table and we get to do our pitch, and they'd say, oh, I didn't know about that. And so they would give it a read through. And whether they, you know, we sold them on it or not really wasn't the point, but it got our foot in the door in a way that if we had given it an original name, it wouldn't have done the job. And there was no real copyright issue. The famous painters of Group of Seven used the word seven, and we used the number. And we felt that was enough enough to distinguish the two projects. And really, if anyone did get confused, we were happy to apologize and let them go on their way. It wasn't a big issue. So that's what the premise of the book is. But moving forward, Chris, the next chapter we wanted to do was something involving a totally different set of characters. I'm allergic to cats, by the way, so please don't let the cat come back into.
I apologize. He is just like, he is a pain. The cat host is like just near my desk and he's jumping into frame. I was hoping I could do that discreetly, but he wouldn't have it that way.
I should take my allergy meds before we started. We also knew that because the characters were really significant members of the 20th century history in Canada, that we couldn't play too much with what happens to them in the book. You can't kill off a character who we know goes on to win the Nobel Prize in the 1950s. Right. Naturally. So it limits the scope of the kind of story we were able to tell. And we knew we wanted to keep making comics. We knew really, really were enjoying the process and the collaboration. So we shifted roots a little bit, and Chris came up with this idea of making the world, like taking the world we were kind of playing in and going one step more towards the fantastical. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go a little more outrageous this time. And we came up with this idea, or he came up with the idea of having nurses that are playing double duty, that like are spies. And there's sort of no better position to be in, because in that point in time, there were no women serving in combat roles in the Canadian forces. So if a woman was capable of completing a mission that required physicality and some lethal skill, no one would bat an eyelash at a person walking by in a nurse's uniform. As well, you know, given the culture in Europe, like you could be on any side of the front. And just as long as you can speak both languages, you can pass as Canadian, you can pass as German, as long as your accent is good either way. So it lent itself to potential for story. And then it just started to spiral out of control in a fun way. So the next four issues of Group of Seven comics, which would be issues 7 through 10, are about the Peregrines.
Okay.
And so it's the next issue, sort of Peregrines Part One, is Group of Seven Comics Issue 7. We didn't want to lose the title. You know, it's sort of this, we worked for 3 or 4 years to establish our presence with that name, and to just sort of start a new series and lose the Group of Seven thing. It seems sort of silly when we were trying to build something before. And branding is really difficult in the climate.
Yeah,
but also it's in the same universe. Like the characters both exist in the same time and place. So we thought, okay, every time we have a new story, we'll have it as like the overhead banner is Group of Seven Comics. It's sort of the name of the publishing company now. And then every time we can have a different story. So it becomes like an anthology series that runs a new story every 4 or 5 issues.
Sure.
So that's sort of how that's playing out. And then the web comic, well, we were just playing with Instagram and trying to say, well, it's a new form, a new way to deliver content to an audience and maybe attract new audiences to what we're doing. So every day, you know, I would draw up 3 panels and we put it online. And the story was much looser and just playful, a little action adventure romp, not a lot of dialogue. So Chris didn't have to do too much. And I got to just play with my, you know, new digital stylus and pad, so I could, you know, make up things and play a little bit of color. And it was never really meant to be a published comic, but we started gaining followers and gaining readers and getting a little bit of fun attention for it. And it really isn't a big leap for us to take those 14 pages, flesh out the story a little bit more, draw a new cover, and then publish it. It's not a hard leap. So we're going to debut Peregrines, the Obstacle Course, as a TCAF exclusive. So it's just going to be available in print in color just for the Toronto Comic Arts Festival as a way for us to just have a little bit of fun and, you know, make a couple people happy who really enjoyed seeing it online and make a little collector's item thing, you know, just have fun.
Doubling back to like what you said about like keeping it all within the, for lack of a better term, the Group of Seven universe,
right.
You know, I don't want to like make a comparison just because it's a comic book, but like, Marvel did kind of like make this whole expanded universe notion like in vogue, like, and stories that are told across different mediums, if that makes sense, like going from web comic to print comic. So like, again, like Group of Seven universe, there's certainly might just be a branding tactic, but I think there's some creative substance to it as well.
I think so too. It, given that we really are two dads and this is sort of like a hobby band we're in, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of like what we do for fun. We can't produce material at the rate needed to really think of it as like too big a universe or too big a brand. It's just sort of this thing we get to do where, you know, we want to be able to go to those events and not have to pay to get in.
Sure.
we want to go to those events and at least cover the bar bill for the night.
Nice.
So if we sell a few comics and we cover the bar bill, make a few friends, you know, that are have great senses of humor and are creative, it really makes it a lot, makes it really special for us. We would both love to be creative full time in whatever that means. Mm-hmm. But it can't be the ambition for each step of the project, because if you're really trying to make the most money, you go after the biggest market, which is not a Canadian historical fiction war comic. You know, you go after a different thing. So we really wanted just to make this story. And if we can do something with it, that's great. That's tons of fun, but it's never been a commercially driven project. That being said, we do okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, we are in the black, and you know, we cover costs, and we have a bank account with money in it that we've been saving. So our print costs for the future issues are already set up, and that's really, really cool.
That's amazing. That's outstanding.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. It's nice to know that, like, well, it's that you're just able to do something really, I don't know, like you said, it was a passion project from the get-go. Yes. And like, you're able to do something that's just got a lot of value to it. And that's wonderful.
I hope. And also, you know, when I was a kid, I would have rather have learned who those characters or who the figures were in history through something fictional, because I was one of those kids that picked up every historical reference from the things I was watching that were fictional. So okay. When I learned my geography and, you know, my military structure, things like that through G.I. Joe. And through Marvel Comics in the 80s. And, you know, I mean, watching The Simpsons, I couldn't tell you how much of, American history and political structure I learned from that show and who they referenced. And just, you know, through fiction and television and movies, I think a lot of people pick up quite a bit. So we were really happy to maybe put a comic book in the hands of a 13-year-old and say, you know, this is the person who wrote that poem that you say every year. You know, these people, this is the guy who tried to design the flag and didn't make it. But that's the guy who did say that's not the one that's going to make it. And this is the guy who made this. And this is the, you know, we also really noticed very quickly that there weren't women in our story.
Sure.
That while the inspiration cast a wide net, you know, Chris was reading about people in the war, and you wouldn't think that's going to narrow it down, but it really did. Just by where he was looking for characters, it sectioned off huge portions of the population. And we noticed really early on that our story was lacking any kind of, you know, female representation. So I think by issue 3 or issue 4, we snuck the Peregrines in a background scene. And because we knew we were going to pivot. We knew that we were going to make another story, and we were going to explore other parts that open up a wider net to take in characters. Chris hasn't announced it, or I haven't announced it yet. Not like we need to announce anything, but each of the 4 women in the Peregrines are inspired by a real historical figure who was a real dynamic and groundbreaking individual at the time. But we did not want to create characters specifically about those women, because those women, that's someone's great grandmother in real life. Mm-hmm. And they're not public figures. It's sure. Like a person who, led the home front militia, or, you know, fought for women's rights. Like, this is not an individual that was seeking a public life. They were looking for change, positive change, and supporting Canada in some way. But this is someone's family that they're not a public figure. So we give little nods to them. But the characters are completely fictional, but there definitely are real people behind the fictionalizations.
Okay. Anyway, that makes
throwing
sense.
Throwing that out there.
And certainly respectful of the families and net positive. Oh,
for sure. I mean, even with the people in Group of 7, like, we were a little concerned about playing with someone's family as well. Like, yeah, these were 7 men. They were all in the public in some capacity, but we did reach out to make sure we weren't stepping on any toes or offending anybody, and we received nothing but either radio silence or support.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
You've actually kind of touched upon my next question, like the interesting component to the graphic novel being the historical element. I think you've gone one step further than many who produce historical fiction have gone, because on the Group of Seven website, you compiled all these teaching resources that are related to the comic. They just complement the comic so well. What do you believe that historical fiction and that, you know, we're talking about a work of historical fiction that includes monsters and otherworldlies. What can that offer traditional academic history?
Interest.
Hey, that's plenty.
It sparks interest. We took the approach of heightening the narrative. War brings out the worst in humanity in a big way. So we just made the worst in humanity a manifestation, a physical manifestation. So yeah, while individuals do get transformed into monsters, it's maybe just the darker side of humanity being represented in a comic book kind of style, where it's a heightened reality, so to speak. But a person gets to read a story that is written to be consumed as a fictional narrative, but then there are those little spatterings of history in it that we highlight too. And it's just a more entertaining way to get the beginnings of a foundation in history. So it's not meant to substitute for or confuse readers in any way, but just be that thing that would have engaged me at 13. Mm. Or it would have engaged Chris at 13 or maybe 12 because he's smarter than me. So yeah, we're happy to throw in those two-dimensional representations of these historical figures, because honestly, I never would have heard of Francis Pega Magabao if it wasn't for this project. This guy's, he's the deadliest sniper in recorded history.
Really?
That's okay. Yeah, over 330 kills and 300 captures
from Canada.
Right, but if you explore a little, you just sort of see that the guy didn't get above like Lance Corporal in the First World War because he's from the wrong place with the wrong name. And right. So it's one of those things where it gave me an opportunity to explore, which actually was maybe the thing that that drew me to the project in a really big way, was we wanted to make a thing, whether it went out to the public or not was sort of secondary, but I was starting, I'm a nostalgic guy. I can be very sentimental sometimes and patriotic in a not in your face sort of way. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with this idea of taking on a project that would allow me to learn about World War I. So I spent years, looking at images, watching documentaries and learning about these seven individuals and a few others that are part of the story as well. Like General Arthur Currie, who has almost the same name as Aquaman, just putting that out there. It's either Arthur Currie or Arthur Currie, depending on how you want to. So I got to go on my own personal exploration of World War I that I never would have gone on if not for this project. So in that sense, I went and did a lot of learning, and it was a valuable journey for me just to take the time to try to walk a little bit in the shoes of individuals that had to do something that you and I thankfully have never had to even come close to doing.
Yeah.
And it brought me an immense sense of pride, a little bit of guilt, a lot of overwhelming emotions about the kinds of sacrifices that countless people around the world, whatever their beliefs, whatever side they fall on, had to deal with and had to sort of step up and risk and sometimes throw away their lives based on the orders of other people. Mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting thing just for that. So if the book gives someone else the opportunity to maybe appreciate a little bit more the kinds of sacrifices people before us had to make for us to be here, that's a powerful thing to do. I can't tell you how many times I tell my children when they complain about something, like, aren't you really grateful that we don't live in a place where we're in fear for our lives and safety every minute of every day? Like we're in a pretty safe neighborhood at a pretty safe time. If it was 100 years earlier, I would have to go fight.
Yeah.
I'd be gone. I'd be dead. I'm slow. My knees are already sore. I wouldn't be here. So I think about that. And then countless people have reached out because their relatives served and they feel a great deal of pride that someone's, you know, telling the story. And again, we're not really going for that as our agenda, but it's been a byproduct of it. There was a young guy who took our comics to Vimy Ridge.
Really?
He felt a connection to it. He took our comics to Vimy Ridge. He was there on Canada Day, and he took pictures of our comic at Vimy on Canada Day and sent them to us.
That's beautiful. I'm sitting
like on that day, I received the email. I'm sitting in my parents' backyard for a barbecue, you know, having a relaxing, luxurious time, so to speak, you know, in context. And I'm transported back 100 years thinking about what these people went through to take this ridge. You know, it's unbelievable. So there have been some really interesting heavy sides to it, but then there's the fun social sides and the creative sides to it. So I think there are many different things that a reader could get out of the book, depending on where they want to go.
That's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. Just like, I agree, man. Like, just, and I say that as the reader, of course, I think Group of Seven has a lot of value in being that spark towards learning something bigger. And, you know, it's just a worthwhile read from, and I cannot wait to continue enjoying this series.
It gets better, I have to tell you. If you're only in the first issue, they haven't even left the base yet.
Yes, I am excited. And now, again, I could talk to you all night about this series, and I have half a mind to, but this is a wrestling podcast, so do have to change the subject eventually.
All right, you're Jason, taking a heel turn.
Hey, nice use of the lexicon. Thank you. Well done. In our email exchange, you mentioned that you're eager to flex your lack of wrestling knowledge. So I take it you've never been what you might call a hardcore fan of professional wrestling.
Wrestling breached my consciousness in the mid 80s with the WWF, and it exploded amongst the boys at school. And, you know, I dipped my toe in. And I'm not sure why I didn't stay in, but within a couple of years, I was no longer paying attention. If I had to guess now, it might be my low-key personality, and I've gravitated towards low-key things. So when it comes to bands that have big hair and makeup, usually it's little much for me. I go to, you know, a little more introverted.
So you didn't gravitate towards characters like the Macho Man Randy Savage or Ric Flair.
It was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yes.
Right. Like I liked the quiet, stoic, deadly and quiet. I mean, like back to G.I. Joe again, you know, like if, I don't know if you ever read or played with G.I. Joe action figures or watched the cartoon. The most popular character was a guy who was silent. And mm-hmm. I love that guy. Like he'd, no quippy comebacks. He just kills you. Like that's all he has to do. So I like my villains large and my heroes quiet, but that's just where I lean. So I knew my way around wrestling at the time. I didn't quite understand that it was the same thing as superhero comics, right? It's muscle men in tights, battling for domination. There isn't really a good and evil. There's a very operatic version of evil. There's the mustache twirling version of evil, but there isn't like an agenda, like I'm going to take over the world or blow up the earth or whatever. There's just good guys and bad guys. So I do get it. I see the parallels with superhero comics. And so I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate the athleticism necessary and the risk that the athletes put themselves through to accomplish entertaining the audience. But it never connected with me the way that it inspired so many people that I've been friends with for years. So
totally fair. I mean, like we have an expression on the show, wrestling is for everyone, but wrestling is also not for everyone. It's totally fair. Sure. I'm not going to be showing you anything from like the grand stages of 80s wrestling, not even like a huge event of any kind. You're going to get a very independent wrestling experience in watching the match I'm about to show you. And I say so because we have a ringside seat, single camera setup, and the match itself is from Montreal's own IWS in partnership with Heavy MTL, the Heavy Metal Festival. The match is scheduled for one fall, and it is for the Heavy Mania Championship, a title, best to my knowledge, has only been defended at Heavy MTL events, but I might be mistaken. One challenger, we have, oh man, a beast of a man, beast of a wrestler, Canadian strongman, Max Lemire. And I mean that legit, man. This guy, like, there's footage of this guy pulling airplanes. Like, he is huge. And you're going to see him. He looks big on camera. He is much bigger in person. His opponent, the champion, he's why I chose this match to share with you today, Jason. Bob Animal Anger. He's a staple of IWS, but he is also, and again, you solved this before we went on air, a brilliant and accomplished graphic novelist, better known in that world is Andy Belanger. Andy's recent accolade, he recently funded his space wrestling comic Mother Trucker on Kickstarter. He did so in 3 hours of launching that campaign, and he published it in recent weeks. And funny enough, he has also worked TCAF events, just as you will be doing so in the coming weeks. So I thought I found someone for you to root for in this.
Well, no doubt. No doubt. I follow him. We're friends on Facebook, whatever that means. And, you know, I follow him on social media.
I'm sure he's going to get a kick out of you catching this contest. To listeners, if you want to watch this match with Jason and I, and I hope you do, please head over to YouTube and look up Heavy Mania / IWS Wrestling Max Lemire versus Bob Animal Anger. This was uploaded by user Montreal Metal Shows, and I'm promoting this video with the understanding from the higher ups at IWS. When you find the video, pause it at the 3-minute mark. And go ahead and pause this podcast so you can go find the match. Are you ready? Good. Jason, we're going to click play on go. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Excellent. 3, 2, 1, go. Now, again, we're starting this 3 minutes in because, apologies to Shane Hawk if you happen to be listening. He is Max Lemire's associate. He cut a brilliant promo before all this. He got the crowd to absolutely despise himself and his partner, his associate, Max Lemire. But, you know, if we were watching that, it would just be Jason and I sitting in silence, and that doesn't translate well for a podcast. But
Max
here comes
is a big guy. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's Max Lemire in the ring, and here he is, Bob Anger.
That is a wild outfit.
Oh, it's so great. Have you seen, like, I know you're familiar with Andy Belanger, obviously, but have you ever seen this this particular attire?
No, I have not. I've heard about it because he, on any comic book podcast that he appears on, it inevitably goes to talking about his wrestling career. So I've heard it described, but seeing it in this, in this version, this is remarkable stuff. And he's having a blast.
Oh man, like he always has fun, and my only regret is not coming to these heavy MTL events, because like it's such a different atmosphere from what I've seen at the IWS shows, be they at Metropolis or MTELUS, whatever it's called now, or other venues. Oh, but the bell has just rang and Max Lemire jumps him from behind.
I think that's maybe one of the reasons like I have trouble with wrestling as a youngster is I liked breaking rules, but I really loved when everyone else followed them. So seeing one wrestler attack before the guy's ready, it seemed like, oh, that's not okay. That's great.
Well, that's okay.
Fair. He's breaking the rules.
Yeah. Cheater.
Yeah. I like my cheaters to get punished.
Well, that's part of the tale of wrestling and the ever growing myth. You know, like maybe they don't have grand schemes of world domination, yes. Just like championship wins and paydays, but seeing the cheaters and get their comeuppance is always very
satisfying.
Cathartic, satisfying, yes. What you call it.
Yeah, it's like an experience of karma. You know, you sleep better at night knowing that a bad guy got beat, took absolutely his punishment. Yeah, it's crazy. Even just knowing that they aren't striking each other in the most painful areas, like, man, it doesn't feel good getting hit even when it's on a less vulnerable spot.
Absolutely. That look,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, they know how to just picks them up and drops them.
Yeah.
The things you can do when you're a strong man. And yeah, certainly these two know how to protect one another, which is so invaluable. But there's only so much that you can do when you're just throwing yourself and your opponent halfway across the ring. Oh, speaking of cheating.
Jayhawk, you know, damn you.
In cartooning, you know, they throw around the term of shorthand a lot. So it's like, you know, where you use a couple quick lines to represent something that's a much more complex idea. Like, you know, particular muscles, you can represent those muscles just by, you know, having a squiggle this way or that way. And wrestling has the same thing. You know, you can see that there are certain, you know, like a barrage of punches to the face that are represented more by a flurry of arms moving, where it's not actually a series of punches making contact with the face, but you can tell, like, that's what it's getting at. It's sort of like a quick way of representing the same idea.
That's so well put. I love that. I love that parallel that you just drew.
There are so many things in comics where shorthand represents something. If you think about, for instance, the idea of drawing someone seeing stars, having so this is quite a you know, complicated physiological experience put into just three stars over someone's head. And a star is not even a star. It's just a five-pointed object.
The polygon, know? So, yeah.
Right. But it's we all know what it means because we all speak the shorthand. And in wrestling, like, the shorthand in the physicality is, like, once you understand it.
Like those chops in the corner, man. I could just hear them even though our sound is low. Forgive me, you were saying.
Oh, it's okay. That's the fun of it, though.
Animal's getting a bit of a rally. He's got Lemire stumbling back to the second rope. Oh!
He doesn't even flinch. Holy cow.
Lemire just catches him. Jeez.
I love...
Talk about being a strong man.
He's got to get straight for this whole thing to work. You know, when he is it a suplex? Is that what that is?
It was a falcon arrow, modified suplex, certainly.
A falcon arrow,
or maybe a peregrine elbow.
Well, there you go. Thank you.
You know, I didn't want to bring this up because I was worried you'd be rooting for the bad guys. But Shane Hawk on the outside also has a background in comics. He's worked with Animal. They've collaborated on WWE comics with Boom Studios.
Right. I'll have to check him out.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, Max is just stretching Bob Animal's arms behind his back. Animal's like, fighting out of it.
Looks like Jerry Springer's there taking photographs.
Oh, that's a day job.
Yeah. Talk show host and once in a while wrestling photographer.
I mean, I'm digging to the recesses of my mind to remember like old replays of Jerry Springer, but like Max Lemire kind of reminds me of one of those bodyguards that he had on the show.
For sure, for sure.
Big flying shoulder tackle by Animal. Rather unconventional, unorthodox execution of the move, but it looked good. Back to the top rope for Animal. Ah, but Lemire cuts him off at the head. We're coming to the home stretch. Who are you rooting for, man?
Oh, anger, without a doubt. I want to see him take the big man down. I thought he was going to, you know, go for his knees and make him suffer. But I'm thinking like, a comic book fighter taking on a bigger opponent. Mm. As opposed to the theatrical side. Oh my God.
Big splash off the top. He's only gotten better at that move, and he's begun to use it as his finishing move. Looks like $1 million. Oh, can't get the big man up.
Break his own back.
Got him by the throat. Boom. What would you call that move?
I don't know.
That one was the choke slam.
That's great. That's
what I have no peregrine pun to attribute to that one. Setting him up.
Oh no.
Oh, reversal. Jackknife cover by Animal. He's got the shoulders down. One, two. Oh, and it's a kick out. So close to getting the victory, stealing it from Max Lemire. What is Animal going to have to do to get the victory over the big man?
He's going into a bag of tricks.
He's got a bag of tricks.
Or has it just got an anvil on there and he's going to hit him in the head?
Something's in that garbage bag. Okay, now full disclosure. I've seen a lot of Bob Animal anger matches, but I don't understand the stuffed animal. I don't recall ever seeing that. But Animal goes for the plastic bag, but Shane Hawk steals it.
Was he going to strangle him with it?
I think so.
He's going to asphyxiate the man. Oh, my gosh.
But unfortunately, it never came to that. Big power bomb by Max Lemire. 1, 2, 3.
Lost?
I'm afraid so. And new Heavy Mania champion, Max Lemire. This is what I'm talking about, man. Maybe the villains don't have grandiose goals, but it's not fun to see them pick up the win in such dastardly ways.
But some people love the villains. I mean, that's totally a fair thing. I have a ton of friends. Like, you know, we collect action figures too. And so a lot of friends I know like really favor getting the villain characters, where I'm all heroes all the time.
That's fair. There's always something compelling about the villain.
So you say.
That was Max Lemire taking on Bob Anger for the Heavy Mania Championship, leading to a new champion at Heavy MTL. Jason, what did you think of the contest?
That was looked like an exhausting feat of athleticism that I'm really glad that I'm on this side of the camera. The kid in me wants to jump off the top ropes too. And I want to feel the spring on the mat and I want to knock down a big guy. Like, that seems like it'd be a ton of fun to do. But now that I'm on the other side of 40, I just think about sore knees and sore back. And man, I get thirsty. Like, oh, I need water after watching that. That was,
oh dude, especially out in the sun. Oh, like, yeah, they did that. I'm sure that was a toasty day.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm worried about their heads being properly covered. It looks obviously like really hard stuff, really challenging and lots of fun. I think I would be a bigger wrestling fan now than I would have been as a kid if it was part of my life. For instance, if one of my children got into it, I would definitely sit with them and get totally into it. And because so many comic book friends of mine are also into wrestling, there's a YouTube channel called Cartoonist Kayfabe. You ever heard of that?
It rings a bell, but please.
Well, there are two cartoonists, really well-known and amazing cartoonists out of Pittsburgh, one named Ed Piskor and one named Jim Rugg. And they started a YouTube show a couple of years ago called Cartoonist Kayfabe, where they were exploring where those worlds kind of meet just through the lingo. But it's basically pulling back the curtain on comic book making and the industry. So that's where the word kayfabe, being the wrestling word, but like keeping up the act of keeping up the theater, even when you're not in the ring. So they are pulling back the kayfabe curtain on comics. And so a lot of people who are fans of the show are also fans of wrestling. And when, you know, we chat in Facebook forums or there's regular Zoom calls where we all kind of pile on and talk. There can be wrestling chatter once in a while. So I've been exposed to it a lot in the last year or two, just through those guys. And it's very much alive and well, without a doubt.
Beauty, wild man. Stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I regret to inform you that I will have to postpone my continued reading of Group of Seven and go check out a Cartoonist Kayfabe, but I will be back with Group of Seven in a very short time. Sir, thank you once again for being a part of the show. Before I let you go, please let the audience know where they can follow you, Group of Seven, and all that good stuff on the World Wide Web.
You can follow me personally on Instagram, if you like, at Jason Lapidus, or you can find Chris at Chris Sanigan, as well at Group of Seven Comics on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and the website for us is www.groupofsevencomics.ca, and that's the number 7 in all of that. And you can find the new issue of Group of Seven Comics called Peregrines on our online store, or you can find the original trade paperback for our Most Secret Tale there as well. And by this point, yes, Peregrines the Obstacle Course, which is just a one-shot sort of idea or you could even think of it as Group of Seven 6.5 if you need to, because it fits just before the story starts. You can find that exclusively at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, which is, I believe, on from May 8th until the 15th.
Beautiful plug. Seamless, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you.
And it's a pleasure, truly.
I have since completed my read of the first book of Group of Seven, and again, I was just absolutely enthralled. If you're into Canadiana, war history, speculative historical fiction, you know, mad science, monsters, any or all of that, check this book out. This is a series you're absolutely going to want to follow. Thanks again to Jason for taking the time to talk with me about the series and indulge me in a little wrestling watch-along. Great conversation with your friend, and to anyone who's hitting up TCAF this year, I need you to actively seek out Group of Seven's exhibition in TCAF's online marketplace running from May 8th through the 15th. I had a great time chatting with Jason, and I'm sure you will too if you have the opportunity to do so. Aside from that, wrestling fans specifically, listen here. TCAF has a panel that you have to check out as well. No Holds Barred. It's TCAF's closing panel this year on May 15th at 5 p.m. Eastern. It features a litany of panelists whose work in comics heavily features a pro wrestling influence. Once again, that's No Holds Barred on May 15th, and it will be moderated by S. Choir Johnson. I've registered to attend, and I really think you should as well. As I mentioned, Smark and Friends has been loosely affiliated with the Toronto Comic Arts Festival. A huge thank you to TCAF Programming and Partnership Officer Irene Valetzas for putting me in contact with Jason. Irene and the TCAF team were equally helpful last year when I started recording this podcast remotely instead of in studio, when they put me in touch with artist and writer Scott Chandler, whose book Bix recently celebrated 1 year on the shelf. So congratulations to Scott for that. Catch my wrestling watch along with Scott on the episode What's in a Name, and also check out the artists in the match that we watched making appearances on this show. I welcomed both Shane Hawk, aka Andrew Stott, and Bob Anger, aka Andy Boulanger, both a handful of times on the show, and it's a great chat each and every time. In fact, just a quick shout out to IWS at large. I reached out to them to see if they were cool with me promoting footage of their event that was recorded by a fan, and I got their blessing, so thank you so much for being okay with that. But as good as the match was, the footage does not do an IWS show justice. If you want the real experience, aside from attending, of course, you're going to have to check out the official IWS channel for that. Catch some of the earliest matches of talents of the likes of Bob and Shane themselves, of course, Ever-Rise, Kevin Owens, the late Brody Lee, and, you know, Sami Zayn's spiritual predecessor, El Generico. All that great stuff and more on the IWS YouTube channel. Check it out. Follow us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at SmarkandFriends. You can follow on Instagram at smark.mouth. You can also like the Two Finger Guns Club on Facebook, which is going to cover all of the TFGC content, which includes Rocketman Explorers premiering its second season just around the corner. Thanks so much for watching Wrestling with Jason Lapidus and I. We're going to be back next week. Till then, friends.
This has been a Two Finger Guns Club production. Pew, pew.